Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning and welcome to Score Values on 670 The Score. I'm your host, Adam Staszynski. Coming up on this week's show, we talk with a doctor at the Jesse Brown VA about the importance of the new PACT Act. Also, we'll be discussing an organization right here in Chicago that helps support survivors of sexual abuse. We are joined now on Score Values by Dr. Heidi Baruch. She's an environmental health clinician with the Jesse Brown VA. And first of all, Heidi, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
And thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So let's start, I guess, a little more general before we get into some things here. We're going to be discussing, first off, the PACT Act. So can you just tell me what this is before we talk about what was going on with the Jesse Brown VA this past week as far as a get-together you had?
Absolutely. So the PACT Act is a new law that was passed in August of 2022. It's really historic in that it expands VA healthcare and benefits for veterans who've been exposed to toxic substances. And it's really the largest growth in VA benefits and care in over 30 years. And some would argue that it's the biggest growth ever. So what it does, it really, it allows the VA, empowers the VA to expand this care for veterans as well as their survivors. And I would add that this is care that they've earned and that they deserve. Mm-hmm. And it was named, I think historically, what this PACT actually stands for. It was named in memory of Sergeant First Class Heath Robinson, who is a combat medic who died of a rare form of lung cancer. And so the PACT is an acronym that stands for Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxins. Mm-hmm. And this promise is a commitment to the VA, by the VA to veterans and their families.
And so this past week, the Jesse Brown VA had a town hall relating to the PACT Act. So could you just talk about what happened that night? It was this past Tuesday, I believe, right? So just talk go ahead.
No, that's great. So it was what we call a town hall. It was attended by folks all over Illinois. They were invited, as well as there were some from Indiana who were remotely tuned in. It was also on Facebook. And we did have over 100 people who attended in person. And it was really part of a national week, the PACT Act Action Week, which the purpose of which is to educate everyone about this law and the specific benefits. And I'm happy to talk about some of those as well. It was a great success.
Oh, please go ahead and talk about the benefits and what you believe was the good things that came out of the town hall.
Well, this town hall was presented by a number of VA representatives, clinicians, folks from eligibility, as well as the VBA, which is the Veterans Benefits Administration, and that's the administration that handles claims that veterans may place. So it was a half-hour presentation followed by And 1 hour of questions and answers. So we heard from people from all over Illinois and parts of Indiana. And that was live on Facebook and on and by phone. And then those who attended in person had an opportunity to speak with claims representatives to see if they were eligible for care, to sign up for health care, and to do what we call toxic exposure screening tests or exams.
So a toxic exposure screening, a toxic exposure screen exam. So what is involved in that, and why is this important to do?
Okay, so the toxic exposure screening is one of the pieces of this new, very, very comprehensive law, and in which every enrolled veteran is offered a toxic screen, toxic exposure screen, and if that screen is positive, they are then referred appropriately to whatever service they need. It could be medical, it could be placing a claim, etc. And the screen is offered every 5 years. And for those who may not want to participate initially, it gets revisited again. And the whole idea is that we want to keep these toxic exposures in mind over the years, and should there be any health impacts of them, it's a way to remind ourselves to address them. And I can say that they have this screening began on November 8th. Nationally, as of last Thursday, there were already 500,000 veterans who had been screened.
Oh, wow.
And that's already grown by the tens of thousands since then. I don't know the exact number
wow.
at this point. But so I would say that I can say that our primary care clinicians, physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, who care for the veterans, are all involved right now. This is our first phase of this screening. And it really comes down to their primary care clinicians. So if there are medical issues, conditions that veterans are concerned about, or if they're having any symptoms, they can be addressed at that time or arranged for further evaluation.
Got it. And so we're speaking with Dr. Heidi Baruch, an environmental health clinician with the Jesse Brown VA. And so I guess that this is somewhat along the same lines, but I know you've also had experience in screening for burn pit exposures. So what's involved in that? And this might seem a little obvious, but why is that also important to look out for?
Well, burn pits were found in Southwest Asia, Afghanistan, among other places where they could be very large fields in which equipment was burned, tires, in some cases human waste, and during the Gulf War, a lot of oil well fires. And so there's a lot of airborne hazards, airborne particulate matter that can affect folks who were exposed. So the burn pit exposure is really one of several concerns that are screened for as part of the toxic exposure screening.
Mm-hmm.
So commonly, the most common exposure screenings are for Agent Orange, for the Gulf War exposures, as well as 9/11, post 9/11 veterans, including those who were in Afghanistan, Camp Lejeune, toxic water exposure, radiation exposure. So these are some of the most commonly asked about exposures by veterans, and there may be others as well. In addition to this toxic exposure screen, we have what we call environmental health registries,
mm-hmm.
which are separate from the PACT Act specifically, but they are voluntary questionnaires and medical evaluations that are really used for the purpose more of research, quality improvement, tracking health concerns and issues over time. And they are not for clinical care. They don't determine one's benefits, and they're not required for filing a claim. Additionally, they're free of charge, and if as a veteran you're not eligible for VA care, you may participate for free if you meet the inclusion criteria. And these registries are for Agent Orange, Gulf War, ionizing radiation, toxic embedded fragments, depleted uranium, and then the airborne hazards, which is the fastest growing one. And this is a registry that's co-administered by the VA and the Department of Defense. And unlike the earlier registries, this one is done online.
Okay, great to know. So now this next piece, it might be, is a little bit more general, but just talking about the Jesse Brown VA itself, in addition to these evaluations and exams, what other types of services does the VA offer veterans?
I mean, we're a full-service hospital. We do general medicine, primary care. We have mental health services, specialty care, things like pulmonary and cardiology. We have rehab services, physical and occupational and speech therapy. We have community care. So if a veteran lives far from the VA and they are unable to go to even some of our smaller clinics affiliated with Jesse Brown, we have the veteran has a choice to see some clinicians in the community. Mm. In addition, home care services for those who need it, hospice care, so all kinds of care.
And so how do veterans apply for these services? You know, if anyone hears this and they maybe are confused about how to do so, what's the best way for them to apply for these services that they are entitled to?
So, I'm going to give you a website and a telephone number.
Okay.
And it is called va.gov/PACT, P-A-C-T, or they can call 1-800-MY-VA-411. And both the telephone as well as the website, they're central contacts that can lead whoever is calling to where they need to go, information about benefits, information about eligibility for medical care. And I actually would like to say something about eligibility,
if please.
I may.
Yeah, go for it.
So this PACT Act that we started talking about also expands eligibility for healthcare for veterans with toxic exposures, and it affects the Vietnam era veterans, Gulf War, post 9/11 veterans. And so, what I would encourage is every veteran. I would encourage every veteran to apply for eligibility, even if you think you're not eligible. You very well may be with this new law and expansion of services.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, this law provides for 20 new presumptive conditions for those who may have been exposed to burn pits, Agent Orange, or other toxins. And what that means is that a presumptive condition is a condition established by law to be caused by military service.
Mm-hmm.
So if a veteran has a presumptive condition, they don't need to prove that it was due to service when filing a claim, as long as they meet the qualifying requirements like where they served and when they served. And it expands markedly the number of conditions. For burn pits, I think that there are more than 20 new presumptive conditions that have been added. Hmm. And so for burn pits, a great number of them are related to respiratory illnesses and any number of cancers. And a big presumptive for those who have been exposed to Agent Orange now is hypertension or high blood pressure has been approved as a presumptive condition.
Okay, so it sounds great that, you know, these new laws have expanded care, it sounds like, for or availability of care for these veterans. And again, we're speaking with Dr. Heidi Baruch. She's with the Jesse Brown VA. She's an environmental health clinician there. And so, Heidi, I guess the last thing I want to ask you is again, as I mentioned, this PACT Act specifically seems to have added ability for veterans to get care for whatever type of condition we've covered that they might have come down with or you know, gotten while they were in service. But it also has seemed to me that, you know, especially as this has been pointed out to me over the last several years, that there still are gaps in VA healthcare that the government can step up and do better with. So I guess if I were to ask you this, you know, what's the next step? Like, what do you think is something that is still missing that can be done for veterans that, you know, as far as expanding their care even further?
So I think this law, which is so comprehensive, actually is doing that. I think this is a big step in terms of covering benefits, both health care as well as disability benefits for so many issues. So we're still in the very early stages of implementing this, all the components of this.
Okay.
So I think this is a huge, huge step that has already begun helping veterans get where they need to go. And education is a really big part of it, and that's a big part of staff education, which has already been in full force with the implementation of this law. So every clinician who sees a veteran is going to be more aware and more aware of resources and to become literate in toxic exposures. So I think that's a big part. There's much research that's been going on about these exposures for decades, and that is also being ramped up. So, and I would say again to any veteran, please consider applying for enrollment in the VA. You very well may be eligible, and we really are committed to your health and to your well-being.
Okay, well, I think we can end on that. Is there anything else that you wanted to add that we haven't covered?
I think we talked about the parts of the PACT Act that are so, I think, important and have expanded care. And the invitation to all veterans and their survivors to apply for all the benefits that they have earned and they deserve.
Okay, well, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And again, that was Dr. Heidi Baruch, environmental health clinician at the Jesse Brown VA. I'm Adam Stasinski. This is Score Values on 670 The Score. And we are joined now by Aaron Walton, the executive director of Resilience, which is an organization right here in Chicago. And so, Aaron, first off, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course, of course. So we'll just start with this. For those that don't know what Resilience is, tell us about Resilience and the kind of work that you do.
Sure. Well, Resilience, we are a nonprofit organization working throughout the city of Chicago with survivors of sexual violence, primarily. Our work is to empower survivors, and ultimately, we're in the fight to end sexual violence in our community. We were founded in 1974 as rape victim advocates, and about 3 years ago, we rebranded to Resilience. But we work with survivors, providing medical and legal advocacy, counseling, and therapeutic services. And then we also have a prevention, education, and training component as well. We were founded by Dr. Natalie Stevens, who was a doctor at Northwestern Hospital, who saw survivors coming into the emergency room, seemingly leave those emergency rooms more vulnerable and traumatized than when they first arrived. And so she noticed that, and she and some other doctors and interns wanted to make a difference in those lives. And she founded Resilience at that time, and well, Rape Victim Advocates, and we have been doing this work ever since.
So since 1974, you mentioned the name change that you went through. And so I want to ask you other changes that the organization has seen, how the organization has evolved in that time, and also why you chose to change the name to Resilience.
Yeah, sure. Well, we chose to change the name because the name Rape Victim Advocates had a very specific identity. Most people, when we did some research, thought that we specifically and exclusively worked with rape survivors and advocated on in their behalf. And so while that is at the core of what we do, our services have expanded over time and evolved beyond that. So we wanted our name to better reflect who we are and the difference that we want to make in our community. And we felt as though Resilience aligned most with that goal. And so, as you stated, we started out working with survivors in the emergency rooms, but have expanded our work to work along the full spectrum of sexual violence. So not just survivors of rape, but also of sexual harassment and other forms of sexual violence. But we had over time just developed a bigger vision of wanting to impact the pervasiveness of sexual violence in our community overall, and included prevention and public education and even some public policy work under our umbrella, because we envisioned a world that when we would expose some of those myths and educate people, that we would make a difference in our cultural response to sexual violence and ultimately change systems and change lives.
When you say change systems, what do you mean by change systems?
Well, we really are talking about all sorts of systems, really. Everyone has their own kind of perspective or biases even around what sexual violence is and what sexual harassment is. And so when we provide education to the police department, as an example, when we provide education to other law enforcement departments, when we even provide education to the nurses and doctors at the hospitals that we partner with, those are systems that when we help to inform them about the trauma of sexual violence and how it really impacts survivors, we are ultimately impacting the way in which they engage with survivors, the stigmas that they have imposed on them, as well as the way they respond to survivors when they engage with them. We work with the education system as well, working with children as young as kindergarten through high school, in effort to ensure that people are educated appropriately on what healthy relationships look like and what violation is and what body autonomy is. And so all of those things are really changing. Our investment in those communities is really helping to change the perspective of what people know to be sexual violence, and ultimately to be appropriate bystanders when they witness those situations, and to help prevent them from happening in the first place.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of important work. And we're talking with Erin Walton, the executive director of Resilience, an organization right here in Chicago. So part of your mission statement for Resilience said that you aim to improve the treatment of sexual assault survivors. I'm curious how you go about doing that.
Well, when we talk about our clients specifically, first of all, I love that question, so thank you for asking that.
Of course.
We use the term trauma-informed care. And when we talk about working with survivors in a direct way, we really want to make sure that we and all of the partners that we work with in serving survivors, so the doctors, the nurses, the social workers, and beyond, even the criminal justice system, we want to make sure that we are all understanding the impact of what trauma does to us, and we want to make sure that we are as informed as possible so that we are providing the appropriate amount of the appropriate care and response. We want to be non-judgmental and to create a sense of safety and trust and transparency when we're engaging with survivors of sexual violence, because without that, what we're doing essentially is exacerbating the trauma in their lives. And we want to do just the opposite of that. We want to be champions for their healing. And so the ways in which we provide education to our partners is really focused around ensuring that treatment is that we're all giving is trauma-informed, so that we can help survivors really recognize their own strengths and build and validate them to move beyond the circumstance and to progress in their healing journey.
Along those lines, I hear a lot, so much about how difficult it is for survivors to come forward about their assaults, about what has happened to them.
Yeah.
And I know this is a difficult question, and there's a lot of ways to answer it, but what is it that makes it so difficult for them to come forward? And then a follow-up to that, how do we make it easier for them?
Yeah. Well, statistically, depending on, you know, what you read, some folks say that up to 70% of people do not report. And there are so many different reasons why. Many of those reasons are based in fear. Particularly if someone has a relationship with the perpetrator, whether it's an intimate relationship or a casual one, people often will feel a little intimidated to report. They might feel as though they won't be believed if they were to report, or they would be asked questions as to their role in the violence. While we know that obviously there is no role that you play in your own violence, but mm-hmm. Some folks might feel that. Some people might feel as though it could be downplayed. They might have, by those they report to, they may feel a sense of shame. They could feel some retaliation, perhaps. Mm. And there's so many different, sometimes people might have a spouse that they don't want to know about the violence for whatever reason, or other family members. So there's so many different reasons. Even people might feel like they don't want to get the perpetrator in trouble. If they know that person, they might not want to get them in trouble if he or she were, you know, someone in the community that is respected, or someone in the family that is respected. Sometimes people don't want to get them in trouble. So there's so many different reasons why people don't come forward. But we as a community can make a bit of a difference if we ensure that when we are told, if we're confided in and we know that violence has occurred, that we believe survivors. And we say that all the time because it's so important. So often we don't believe survivors. We question them in their situation, which we don't do that in other situations. You know, if someone was robbed, for example, we don't say, well, what were you wearing and why were you there and were you drinking? We don't ask, you know, other victims those questions, but survivors of sexual violence get they get re-traumatized with questions of that insinuate blame or shame. And so if we learn how not to do that, to be listeners and supporters when folks do confide in us, I think that will make a difference in people feeling more comfortable to report officially.
And that's it for this week's edition of Score Values on 670 The Score. If there's a topic you'd like to hear about on a future edition of the show, or if you'd like to share information about an upcoming charitable event, send us an email at scorevalues670@gmail.com. That's scorevalues670@gmail.com. I'm Adam Staszynski. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Score Values on 670 The Score.